The following is a product of the Uprising High School Ministry at the Grove.
Okay, so we are going to continue the series on David, and we'll be in 1 Samuel, and we're actually going to start 2 Samuel. So here's the deal. Yesterday we had our snowball trip, okay? And it was great. We had like almost 50 of us total up there, a few from Rock Point and a few from here. The Grove was kind of cool to come together, just, you know, go shred the gnar up on the mountain. And I don't even know if I said that right, but yep. So we went snowboarding. It was great. I got everybody checked in. I went up on the mountain, went up to the high part with Tommy and I don't even remember, Shelby? Shelby, I said it, I remembered, give me a second, okay? I hit my head. We go up to the very high peak just because, like, all the stuff down low is where everybody hangs out and it's just crowded and whatever. And I like the steep hills and stuff. So we go up top, and in our second run down, I was sticking to the shady side of the trails because the sunny side, there wasn't a whole lot of snow over there, and anything that was there was super thin, so you're catching rocks and stuff. So I was trying to stick in the shade. Problem is, because at the time of day and where the sun was, the shade was really close to the trees. And so I was getting a little too close to the trees, and I kind of like, my board, I haven't had it waxed in like 4 years because I don't go boarding that often. And so I kind of got a little too close, couldn't cut back and cut away from the tree, so I kind of just went totally on my toes a little bit. And because it was super icy, I just slipped and fell, and it was like a freaking like giant bobsled run from that point forward. And I was sliding down, and I'm like trying to get my body turned around and see what's up. And then all of a sudden, I just kind of feel something just kind of like boop, hit my leg like that. And it was in this moment, time froze. It happened really, really fast, but it just kind of like went really slow. I just kind of felt the tip, and I looked, and I see this giant tree stump. And I'm not kidding you, so I went flying down, hit this tree, and just went poof. Spun, somersaulted about 50 feet down the hill sideways, but it didn't hurt at all, which I can't explain, and it was really fun. So I ran into a tree, and from that point forward, I was like, let's just go down and see what everybody else is doing, and tried to teach people to snowboard on the bunny slope, which didn't go well. I almost killed Mac and Emma, and it's okay. Mac ended up in the emergency room, but not because of that sort of thing, but she's alive here today, right? She's alive and well. Look, she has a baby. Congratulations. So because of my decision in that, we're going to be talking a little bit about decisions today and how decisions sort of, how they play out in our lives and how other people's decisions play out in our lives, right? Like, what do our choices mean for us and what do our choices mean for others? And I'm trying to think of a big word, invertedly. Vis-a-vis-ly, whatever. I don't know. What'd you say? Vice versa. Yeah, I feel like there's like a Lee word somewhere in there. Anyways, so and how other people's choices sort of what does that mean for our lives and how do they impact us? And what does that mean with our relationship ultimately with God? So 1 Samuel, we're gonna be looking at 1 Samuel 29, 1 Samuel 30, 1 Samuel 31, and we're gonna jump into 2 Samuel chapter 1. Just so you know, the books 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel are really kind of like really just one book. They're separated into two, maybe because they just didn't want it to be super long, but also because it's sort of where we end today. Chapter 1 of 2 Samuel is a changing point in this story of David. 1 Samuel is really all about Saul being king, right? And David's life under King Saul. And then 2 Samuel, I'm going to sort of ruin a big, you know, point today, but Saul dies. I know, moment of silence. And that's so 2 Samuel's kind of like post the death of Saul. Like, what does this look like? What is David's life now, right? Because he's supposed to become king. All right, so 1 Samuel chapter 29. I don't really know what parts I'm going to read and not going to read, just because if I just sat here and read through four chapters of 1 Samuel, or three of 1 and one chapter, second, you guys would all be asleep. And I know it actually sounds like a pretty good idea, probably to some of you. It does to me. But I don't want to sleep. I want to like get Jesus-y and stuff. So, 1 Samuel chapter 29. All right, so if you remember, it's like long hair back here, like with this mic cord. Sometimes you ever wish you have long hair? Do you ever, guys, short hair? You ever get out of a pool and you just like pretend just for a minute like you have long hair? No, it's just me? Okay, well, sometimes in the shower, like I'm just, right when I need a haircut, like I just kind of like, I like to feel it wet and like wave. Getting dizzy. Okay. I was deprived of oxygen at a high altitude yesterday, and so my brain is broken. Yeah, that's right. You know, you really were. Okay. All right. So we left with David living in Philistine, all right? Philistine, depending on what part of the country you're from. And he's hanging out there, and basically the king of Philistines, they're going to go, and now they're going to go and pursue Saul. This is where we are in chapter 29 of 1 Samuel. They're going to go and pursue Saul, and David comes with him, all right, brings all his guys with him on this journey to go basically fight his own people, which is kind of interesting when you think about David. And you think about the fact that he is promised, right? He's had two opportunities to kill Saul, right? Once when he was taking a dump in a cave, which I guess he just knows as a guy, you never mess with another guy when they're taking a dump. It's just, you know, it's one of the many unspoken rules. Below the belt, things like that. You know, and then the second time when he was passed out and his army was coming up on David to try and kill him, and he went down in the middle of the night, stole a spear, and was like, hey, you know, good morning, I stole your spear, I could have killed you, right? So he's had two opportunities to kill him, but because Saul has been chosen by God to look after the nation, and even though God has kind of like regretted that decision and chosen David, David still has reverence for God's anointed. He still has reverence for God put this guy in leadership. And even if God doesn't want him there anymore, God can remove him at any time. He's God. We've already seen God in this story struck a dude down, right? The guy that God struck down for not helping David out, and then so David took his wife, that's his wife, after the fact, to be a nice guy. And so David knows, like, God can strike Saul down at any time. He can just a lightning bolt in the nostril, whatever, right? I mean, however you choose. You choose your choice of how you'd like to die. And so David just has that trust. And so that's why he's sort of just let go of, like, I'm not going to kill David. And none of my guys, or I'm not going to kill Saul, and none of my guys are going to be able to do that either. And yet here he is, he's going to battle with the enemy, on the enemy's side. They're seeking to go and kill Saul. Interestingly enough, in chapter 29, all the Philistine commanders, all the Philistine commanders were angry with Achish, who's the king. And he said, send that man back, that he may return to the place you assigned him. He must not go with us into battle, or he will turn against us during the fighting. How better could he regain his master's favor than by taking the heads of our own men? Isn't this the David they sang about in their dances? Saul has slain thousands and David his tens of thousands. And so they're like, we know David has issues with King Saul, but if he comes right now, like, we'll be going to battle and he'll just kind of come in behind us and just take us all out to get back in good grace with his king. Like, send him back to the place you told him he could hang out in our country. Like, we don't want him here. And David's like, kind of like, what have I done to show that you can't trust me? Like, all I've done is shown you can trust me. And the king's like, yeah, I know, but, like, you know, if you just sometimes, regardless of how good someone is, you got to cut them from the team because we're poison. If no one trusts that person, then it ruins the whole team, you know, vibe and environment. You got to cut that bad egg. Otherwise, the whole case of eggs stink and are smelly. And so they send David back. Here's the thing, chapter 30. David goes into his town where he's staying, and he finds that the Amalekites, which you need to remember that group of people, Amalekites. You don't really need to remember that group of people beyond this message, because you'll probably forget it anyways, but just at least for this next 20 minutes, remember this group of people, all right, the Amalekites. He goes back, and he finds that in his camp, right, where all the children and women and their livestock and everything that they had are now all gone. And the place is destroyed. The Amalekites came and raided this place. Now, there was no one dead. They took everybody alive. And so David goes to God. After him and all his men wept, it says, it's really interesting, actually. Verse 4, it says, so David and his men wept aloud until they had no strength left to sleep. They basically cried themselves to sleep. Hundreds of warrior men coming home to everything, their home being destroyed, gone, and they just can't do anything. They just weep and weep and weep for hours. In the van yesterday, one of the guys was watching The Fault in the Stars on his phone, and he wept and wept. And I told them to get out of the van with that nonsense. There's no weeping in this church van. But that was just for a few minutes. For hours, these guys cried until they just basically had no energy left and passed out. And then they get up, and it says David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because of his sons and daughters. But David found strength in the Lord his God. It's interesting to see what David's guys do here, right? These are guys that trust David and love David enough to follow him into battle, literally, and whatever he calls and asks of them to do, they'll do. They're willing to die for him. And yet, here they are in this moment, and it's not like David stole all these guys, but because David's their leader, and this happened under his leadership, all their family, their children were gone, they needed to blame someone. They needed a point and just fixate their frustration and anger on someone. And I think all of us in this room do that. Something bad happens in our lives. Sometimes even our own fault. Or just no one's fault, really. But because we can't find the cause of the blame, we have to put the blame on someone. And we usually will choose a family member or a friend or sometimes even God, when it's like, nothing, if anything bad happens in your life, it's not from God. As a matter of fact, anything that is good, I mean good, not like what the world says is good, but I mean truly good, is from God. And that's it. Nothing bad is from God. It's not caused by God. Ultimately, it's all just a result of sin, and most oftentimes, someone else's sin or your own. And yet, the one person who we know could never do anything bad, we so often blame him. I think we blame God because we know that if we make God our enemy, it allows us to be able to do and respond in whatever way we want without that conviction. In other words, we blame God so we can justify fighting someone back. We blame God so we can justify hurting someone else. We blame God so we can justify using substance to escape from the pain or hurting ourselves to escape. And so we distance God so that we can sort of do what we know we shouldn't. And these guys here are doing the same thing. It says they were bitter in their spirit. So they're going to take their leader, their actual leader, and really their spiritual leader, and they're thinking of stoning him. They needed someone to blame. But David doesn't freak out and he doesn't run away. He says he finds strength in God. Something that I think that we need to just, when life sucks, when life's hard, when bad stuff happens, whether it's by our choice, someone else's choice, or just a result of this world sucks, we need to find strength in God. And I think, what does that look like? David basically goes before God. And he asks God, he says, shall I pursue this raiding party? Will I overtake them? Pursue them, he answered. You will certainly overtake them and succeed in the rescue. David and 600 men with him came to the Besor Valley, where some stayed behind. 200 of them were too exhausted. Okay, so 200 of these guys were overweight. And they were too tired and out of shape to cross this valley. But David and the other 400 continued the pursuit. They found an Egyptian in the field and brought him to David. They gave him water to drink, food to eat, part of a cake of pressed figs. Here, have some cake. and two cakes of raisins, raisin cakes, not as good. He ate and was revived, for he had not eaten food or drinking any water for 3 days and three nights. In other words, this dude was on the verge of death. Think like, you know, your survival show when that dude's about to die, you know, or a movie like Crossing the Desert, like just laying there, just dry cotton mouth, tongue hanging out, vultures circling above. That's where this guy was at when they found him. So they hooked him up, hydrated him, gave him some food. And David asked him, who do you belong to? Where do you come from? Like, who are you, dude? Like, which, can I say, it's cool to see that this guy could be an enemy. This guy could even be someone who was part of the raiding party, who had a hand in helping capturing all his men's family and children and his own wives. And yet, before he needs to know that, he sees that there's a need to help. And he helps him. And so he says, where are you from? He says, I'm an Egyptian, the slave of an Amalekite. My master abandoned me when I became ill 3 days ago. Oh, that's nice. Oh, you're sick. Bye. My master abandoned me when I came ill 3 days ago. We raided the Negev of the Kerethites, some territory belonging to Judah and all this stuff. So they basically said we did all this raiding. And so David goes, oh, so you're a slave of these people, the Amalekites, who just basically took all of our family and everything we own. Okay, where are they at? And the slave just kind of like, okay, I'll tell you, but like, you can't mess, like, don't hurt me. Like, just give me your word that you'll look after me, you'll protect me, and I'll tell you where they went. Like, they left me for, like, if someone leaves you for dead, like, you're wait, like, you want to get back at them. If someone leaves you for dead, and then, like, here comes this army who, like, feeds you and stuff, yeah, I'll tell you where they went, just as long as you promise not to hurt me, then we're all good. And so he tells them, and David goes after the Amalekites, and it says he led David down there, and they're scattered all over the countryside, eating, drinking, and reveling because of the great amount of plunder that they had taken. So they're celebrating, man. They just won the Super Bowl. They're drunk. They've got all kinds of wine, and like, they're just killing goats left and right. Like, here, have a leg of goat and enjoy that. Cook it over that fire over there. It'll be fantastic, right? And so they show up. They're drunk. So it's like, if you're going to fight someone, do it when they're drunk and you're sober. That's not the lesson you should take out of this, by the way, today. So David fought them from dusk until the evening of the next day. So for about 24 hours, through the night, into the morning, and all throughout the day, and none of them got away, except for 400 young men who rode off on camels and fled. Like that, it's like, and nobody got away, except for 400 young guys who were probably scared and, you know, had a little more energy, and they bailed on camels. And so they take off. But here's what's cool. Verse 18, David recovered everything the Amalekites had taken, including his two wives. Nothing was missing. Young or old, boy or girl, plunder or anything else they had taken, David brought everything back. He took all the flocks and herds, and the men drove them ahead of the other livestock, saying, "This is David's plunder." Now, here's what's really, really cool. They come back to the 200 guys that sort of were like, hey, good luck with the fight. Just leave whatever you don't want to take with you here. We'll look after it. And David comes back to them, to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to follow him and who were left behind at the Besor Valley. They came out to meet David and the men with him. As David and his men approached, they asked them how they were. But all the evil men and troublemakers among David's followers said, because they did not go out with us, we'll not share with them the plunder we recovered. However, each man may take his wife and his children and go. Oh, that's nice. Here's your family, but you don't get anything else. That's so thoughtful. David replied, no, my brothers, you must not do that with what the Lord has given us. He has protected us. And he has delivered all this into our hands. Who will listen to what you say? The share of the man who stayed with the supplies is to be the same as that of him who went down to battle. All will share alike. I love this because what we see in David is we see great leadership and wisdom in the sense that every single person in his I feel like, I mean his army, but I feel like so we can relate. Every single person on his team is equally valuable, regardless of the role they served. Even though they weren't there retrieving stuff, they still stayed back. And maybe it was because they were tired, but they still helped us out by looking after the things we didn't want to bring with us. And so just because they weren't there doesn't mean they don't get anything. As a matter of fact, they do get not just their family and their kids, but they're also going to get the exact same amount that all you guys get. It's that characteristic that ultimately comes from God in the sense of it doesn't matter really how much you live your life. No, I mean, I don't want to say it that way. But how, if you become a pastor or if you just like get a job somewhere and you just, however you share Christ, however you live out your faith, you don't have to be, wear a robe and be all fancy and ask for tithes weekly and all that stuff. Whatever, you don't have to have a Bible degree. All you have to do is just basically just be on the team and serve your role, whatever part of the body you are, and you'll be blessed equally as anyone else. God gives us all that same promise, right? Eternity with him. And so they recover everything, right? And so this is all while that all happens, right? So this is all happening while the Philistines are attacking the Israelites and Saul's army. And so what's happening, so it's kind of like we have two things simultaneously happening, right? So David goes and he recovers all this stuff, right? I mean, he just went through in a span of just, a few days or whatever of coming, getting kicked out of an army, coming home to all his family and everything taken, having to go to battle, his own guys trying to kill him in the midst of that or talking about killing him because they're mad at him, they're blaming him. And then his guys wanting to just keep all this stuff, and he tells them, no, we're not going to do that. We're gonna treat everyone equally here. Everyone who's a part of us is going to get something from this, because it's not, we didn't earn this. This is something God gave us. And I think the reality is the same for us. We have this bucket back here that someone brought up about getting chickens and goats, which sounds silly to us, but helps people out tremendously. And somebody threw in some change, or a couple of you threw in some change. We don't do a tithe in the high school group or anything like that. But I think that when we provide an opportunity for you to be able to give, you should seize that. And you should take advantage of that. Because anything you have, it's not from you. It's from God. Just Even if your family earned it, even if you say, no, I worked, I clocked in, I got a job, what if you were born out in the bush somewhere in another country? Like, by the grace of God, you happen to be born here in the suburbs of Chandler, okay? You're blessed, all right? You're one of the wealthiest people in the world. Trust me, and we have a bucket back there asking to help some people out with chicken and goats, and there's just a few quarters and nickels and stuff in that. Give what you have. You're blessed to have. It's God's first, you're second. And live that way. That doesn't mean that you can't, enjoy the blessing and do things for yourself and provide for yourself. But man, give. If you've got extra, give it. Especially when the opportunity is given. So they all share alike. And so David has this moment. Now, chapter 31 and chapter 1 of 2 Samuel are sort of the same story told from two different perspectives. It's basically how Saul dies. So the Philistine army, this is all while David was dealing with his stuff and trying to get all his people back. The Philistine army catches up with Saul and his army, and they're done. Like, they're done. It says that he was struck by an archer. In other words, the Philistine army was close enough to Saul, and Saul and them were likely on a mountain, or the battle all took place near this mountain, and the archers were close enough to where an arrow struck Saul that would eventually kill him. Like there was nothing, there was no surgery, there was nothing that was going to happen that was going to save him. Yet, so Saul, he's like, okay, I'm going to die. We're all dying. This is going to happen. Remember too, like Saul knew, he was told yesterday, like you're going to die tomorrow and so are your sons. So his sons are dead. Jonathan's dead, David's best friend, right? And now here's Saul, he's been hit with this arrow. He knows this is it. This is my moment. I'm going to die. If I don't die right away though, and that army gets to me before I die, they're going to come up here and do all kinds of messed up stuff to me to make sure that I go out in the most painful, humiliating way possible. And so he looks to his armor bearer and he goes, oh, armor bearer, like, in my life, like, do me a favor, like, kill me. Like, they're going to come. They're going to mess with me. They're going to hurt me even more. Just end it. I'm already dead. And his armor bearer's like, uh-uh. I'm not going to be the one to kill you. No, I'm not doing that. And so Saul takes his, it was either a sword or a spear. And in chapter, or both, and at the end of 1 Samuel, it says it was a sword. And then from the perspective of this Amalekite person who happened to be there, says it was his spear. And so he falls on it to kill himself, and it doesn't kill him. So now he has an arrow and a sword or his spear, probably a spear, goes through him. He's got an arrow, a spear in him, and he's just sitting there like, why can't I die right now? God, you told me yesterday I would die. Like, let's make this happen. I'm pretty close. And he doesn't die, but when he falls on his sword, his armor bearer is like, okay, you fell on your sword, I'm falling on mine. His armor bearer does a good job because he dies, you know? And so now Saul's like, I have nobody to kill me now. What the heck? Like, these guys are going to come and get me. And then along comes this Amalekite. And this is how we know this story, because this Amalekite, right, says he happens to be in the area. And this is in chapter 1 of 2 Samuel. He's reporting this to David. He brings Saul's crown, right? The crown of Israel, the symbol for the king of Israel, he brings this to David. And he's telling him this story. I saw this happen. He fell on his sword or spear and it didn't kill him. And then he asked me to kill him. And so I did. And it was sad. And I ripped my clothes and cried. And it was, you know, threw dirt on myself because that's how they mourned. And so here's his crown. And David goes, He's distraught. This is chapter 1 of 2 Samuel. He can't believe it. Just within a day or two, you know, he just had to deal with losing his family and all his men's family and trying to get that back. And now here he comes thinking like, finally, life's good. We're back in order. And then he finds out that his best friend, I mean, his best friend, I would argue the person that he loved more than anyone else in his life, finds out that he's dead. Which, like, I don't know what he was thinking. He was in that same battle, right? He was going to go to war with these guys and to fight them, but he finds out that he's dead. And then he finds out that Saul is dead. And he is broken up. He's upset. It says, David and all his men with him took hold of their clothes and tore them. They mourned and wept and fasted till evening for Saul and his son Jonathan, and for the army of the Lord, and for the nation of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. David said to the young man who brought him the report, "Where are you from?" "I'm the son of a foreigner, an Amalekite," he answered. David asked him, "Why weren't you afraid to lift your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" Then David called one of his men and said, "Go, strike him down." So he struck him down, and he died. For David had said to him, "Your blood be on your own head. Your own mouth testified against you when you said, 'I killed the Lord's anointed.'" And so this Amalekite basically ended up being the one to kill Saul, which Saul, you know, from Amalekite's perspective, asked to be killed and clearly wanted to die. So the Amalekite thought, hey, I'll do him a favor. I'll bring this crown to David and get in good with him. But there was no reverence there. Here's what's really interesting about the story, and I'll end with this. And here's why I said you needed to remember the name Amalekite. If you're on the worship team, come up. Saul, the whole reason that he basically lost favor with God, the whole reason God felt like, man, I regret making this guy king, allowing the people to choose him to be king, was because God told him to go and destroy this group of people. I mean, completely wipe them out. Man, woman, child, infant, everything, livestock, just completely obliterate and erase this culture because of how evil and how messed up and how wrong, like the ISIS of their culture. And so Saul goes and he attacks them all, but he doesn't destroy all of what I'll say is ISIS of their culture, the Amalekites. He only destroys the ones that won't help him out. So he keeps some alive that he thinks he can be of some use, and he takes all their stuff and basically just plunders them and brings them back to Samuel. This is when Samuel was still alive and was like, hey, I brought this stuff back. No, it's for God. This isn't for me. And Samuel's like, you're done. God knows your heart. You didn't obey. You were greedy. And when I first was reading through the story, I thought, like, man, like, this is a reminder of we need to be obedient to God regardless of how crazy it might sound. But I think more than that is we need to be careful about what keeps us from being obedient to God. And I think greed and selfishness is something that sinks in. And so ultimately it was Saul choosing not to completely wipe out the Amalekites, who later, it's that same group of people that raids David's army and steals their family and everything they own. But David ends up wiping out. And at the same time, it's an Amalekite, someone who Saul was supposed to kill and end, who ends up ending his life. And it's crazy to see how basically Saul's last moment was his failure sort of reminding him why he lost God's favor. His choice and how it impacted his life. And how that choice impacted David and all those other guys' lives. And how David's first act after finding out that Saul had been defeated and killed was to ultimately do what Saul couldn't do. That was to destroy an evil person who had zero reverence for God. And it sounds crazy, and I know it's Old Testament, and like, man, they're killing people left and right. But ultimately, I think we all have all kinds of messed up stuff that happened in our lives, be it our decision or someone else's decision around us, or just stuff in our family, your parents, whatever. And it doesn't make sense, and it seems like, God, why the heck would you allow this to happen? Or maybe even we blame him and say that he's the cause of it. The reality is it's not. And we can respond like David's guys do and just blame God or find someone to blame so we can justify doing something just as messed up. Or we can seek God in that and ask him, God, what do you want me to do? How do I respond to this? How do I respond to this evil and just messed up situation in my life? Be it something you caused or someone else caused, or it's just a result of this world. Seek God. Respond before you make your choice. Seek God and find out what the best choice is to make. Let's pray and let's worship together one last time. God, such an incredible story, and it's just crazy how poetic it is that you would use the Amalekites the way you did throughout that story, God. God, we want to be like David and seek you in every area of our life, even when the world seems like it's out to get us. Even when those closest to us, God, just it feels like they want to destroy us and hurt us, maybe even our own family. God, there's so much pain and hard stuff that happens that we just don't know what to do. God, we're sorry if we blame you, but we need wisdom and guidance and how to respond. And how to live through and persevere through the junk in life. God, we want to respond with the right choice. We want to respond with what you would have us do and what you would do yourself. God, we thank you for your love. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.